Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 207. I want to thank each of you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that leave a rating and review on iTunes. That helps us get the word out to as many coaches as possible and help out as many coaches as we can. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Jim Aware, for sponsoring this episode. Appreciate all that they do, and I only partner with companies that I believe in. Excited this week to have Davis Murphy with us. I'm down at the TSAC National Conference here in Orlando, Florida. It's sunny. We're outside. Davis is coming off a little bit of an injury here, and so he's being a good sport and joining us. But, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Davis and I are just getting to know each other, but, you know, and he's got a really cool, unique story. Davis, kind of for everybody that's listening, tell a little bit about your background, kind of where you've been and what's taking you down your road.
Okay, absolutely. I started off in the fitness industry, working gym memberships up to club management, personal training, then made my way into the military realm as an instructor, strength and conditioning coach, managing recreation and fitness for the Marine Corps, and then did a little stint with Exos as well. It's been my journey. The tactical community is fantastic to work with because obviously they have a lot more at stake.
Yeah.
Than some of the regular athletes that people deal with. So
I know my experience, short-lived in the military because I went on to Tennessee, but taking the oath to be a strength coach was a different experience for me, And just how much pride and it goes into it and the type of character that you're dealing with each and every day.
Sure.
I resonate with that as well. Which one of those experiences, Davis, the fitness business, the industry, tactical strength and conditioning, or your time with Exos, which one of those experiences best defined you as the coach you are today?
I would have to say my experience with the Marine Corps and in the development and the education and the implementation of what we call the high intensity tactical training program, the HIT program.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the keys was educating the staff. So if you had a degree, we paid for CSCS, paid for FMS, HKC, the hard style kettlebell training.
Right.
We wanted to get people as credentialed and knowledgeable as we can, or as we could, so that they could then transfer that onto those that they trained. And I think, bottom line, through all that education, for me, what really kind of defines is what you do in the gym or in your session should always have a direct transfer into how you're asked to perform.
Great.
Regardless.
Great.
And so that's really what I bring into each session. And each workout and each training certification that I provide.
That's fantastic. Now we're going to get into the high intensity tactical training program because that's some fascinating stuff. But before we do, I always ask the biggest mistake question. Just because I think as coaches, if we can avoid other people's mistakes, mm-hmm. a lot of times we can get to that to that spot on the line wherever that is a little bit quicker sometimes. So what's been your biggest mistake working with your operators your athletes?
Mm-hmm.
And how you learn from it?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes is expecting a certain baseline knowledge coming in.
Sure.
And really what I truly kind of realized and just kind of created a base platform for myself is just thinking, hey, this is an empty cup of tea right here, or an empty cup. It's my responsibility to fill that tea and that knowledge up to the top for them. Thinking that they have a baseline knowledge coming in, and let's face it, we're guys,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we grew up kind of wanting to be or listening to the biggest guy in the gym.
Yeah.
You know, whether he knew what he was doing or not, know, or whether he was doing things correctly or not.
Absolutely.
That's who we were listening to. And, you know, as we progress and as we get older, that's when we start to realize, okay, well, I just want to be able to kind of move like I did in high school or college. And then eventually you have kids and all that, and you say, well, I just want to be able to keep up with my kids on the playground, you
right.
know, that type of thing. So again, it's educating and progressing past or transcending our old mindset, I would say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. You mentioned that the high intensity tactical training program, and that was kind of, you know, in an effort to educate your operators. You know, they were getting information from everywhere. They were
right.
getting Olympic lifting and powerlifting and CrossFit and all these different programs, and individually as sports, we all love those sports.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to working with our elite fighting soldiers,
sure.
it wasn't always maybe the best thing for them to be doing. You created, your solution was the high intensity tactical training program. Talk a little bit about that and how that addressed maybe differently than some of those sports.
Absolutely. I'll start off with how I used to address the group on the first day, first session of training,
right.
During the certification, right before the week-long HIIT course, is I would ask the Marines, okay, why are we here? Why do you need to learn to train differently? And they would throw out, you know, some kind of answer, like A-types do. and then I'd say, okay, well, what does that mean? And they'd throw out another answer. I'd say, okay, well, how about this? What's Monday in the gym? Every one of them yelled out chest,
right.
you know, because it's a universal chest day,
yeah.
right? When you haven't transcended that mindset yet, it's a universal chest day.
Right.
So I'd say, okay, that's the first reason why we're here. Second, raise your hand if you've been deployed. Okay? Keep your hand up if you drew contact when you were deployed. Okay? Which means you got shot at.
Right.
So they kept their hands up, and I say, okay, did it matter how much you benched then?
Right.
Like, no. Okay, that's why we're here. Because what mattered was how quickly you reacted to that, plus how quickly you reacted to that going laterally,
right.
and laterally under load. So if what you're doing in the gym isn't directly transferring into how you're asked to perform, like I just said,
right.
then what's the point?
Right.
You know, and so that was kind of the basis, because we saw a lot of injuries, we saw a lot of people doing things incorrectly from the rampant upswing of the extreme conditioning programs.
Right.
You know, we don't need to name names, but we'll just leave it at extreme conditioning
sure.
programs. And so we wanted something that was for them specifically and countered the negative effects of the other things that they were getting, because there was a void.
Yeah, sure.
So,
well, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my experience, you know, with Special Forces soldiers was, you know, I had to change my mentality where, in some ways it's good to go to failure in the weight room, because that's when, you know, it's overload and progression
sure.
and all that. But you tell a Special Operations soldier to go to failure and they don't know what that means necessarily,
right.
you know. And they identify typically with that extreme, in those extremes. You know, how did you take those type A personalities, you know, that wanted to just constantly redline their body,
mm-hmm.
you know, and educate them to a point to where they understood? I mean, and they're very smart as well. So,
sure.
you know, the rational mind understands it. The emotional elephant doesn't sometimes.
Correct. Yeah, and I think it throughout the week-long course and the education and that type of thing, we especially would key on limits. So we would break every piece down, especially on the Olympic lifts, is we would go from, you know, top, down, back up.
Right.
So like a clean, you know, all the progressions within them. So can you do this? Okay, you progress to the next one.
Right.
Okay, you progress to the next one. But if you don't have enough ankle flexibility, hip mobility, that type of thing to get down into the starting position for a clean, then you know what? Then we get the blocks out and you can still get your workout on a hang clean
right.
until we get you down to that point. those types of things. And just simply letting them know right off the bat too, here's how you get away from the lift, so you don't have to push yourself in an unsafe scenario. I mean, if you can't do it, then that's what bumper plates are for, is to let that thing drop. So here's how to get away from it. Now here's how you'd lift it, you know. So it's just walking them through the education process, letting them understand and learn. And you see the light bulbs go off. I mean, you know, so that's when you know, okay, they're getting it. And then you see them self-monitoring sometimes too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, two things you said in there that I think were really good were, you know, you showed them their limitations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, especially when you're dealing with elite athletes, you know, that type A mentality, they can't handle when they can't do something, you know, and so showing them their limitations, you know, by doing maybe a single leg squat, you know, when they, you know, when they're wanting to go to the double leg and load up the bar, show them that they can't even do a single leg, that, you know, that demonstrates something that they're lacking, and therefore they're going to kill themselves until they get that that right. And the second thing I think that you said that was really good is you provided solutions. You know, you would show them how they could accomplish that, and that's a great way. Just whether or not you're working with special forces or anybody else, that's a great way to break down some walls.
Sure.
With that mindset. We were talking off camera a little bit earlier about, you know, you're presenting here at the TSAC about kind of funding, you know, and whether you're a college strength coach, high school strength coach, working in the tactical space, you've got to deal with funding.
Sure.
What were some, you know, getting support, you know, garnering support? You've had to do that everywhere you've been, you know, with either being brass, you know, up the chain or, you know, the company that you've worked for. What are some of the best tactics that you've used to get support so that you can be able to provide equipment, you know, to your athletes?
Sure. I think the main thing is if you can show a cost for preventing injury and the cost associated with what that means, like if I can prevent this many hamstring pulls or something like that, or that time off from athletes or that kind of a thing, then that equates to this dollar amount.
Right.
And so then you tie that equipment or that education, certification, whatever it is you're trying to acquire, you tie that into that cost savings and say, look, this cost a quarter of what it's going to save us in the long run.
Right.
You know, that kind of a thing. So have a direct tie-in to equipment and result. Some of the work that I've done, or the work that I've done with NSCA on being able to acquire government funding to utilize their certification courses and such, it's really based around raising the baseline level of education. So as coaches, if we don't have to constantly tell someone to dorsiflex the foot on an A-skip, you know, that kind of a thing, then we can get to more of the, what I call the sexy stuff. We can get to the coaching.
Yeah, sure.
We can get to the fun stuff that actually shows results instead of instructing. We get more into coaching, which has a performance, you know, goal, performance base down the line, instead of just constantly saying the same things over and over again. Because as soon as we get new stimulus, I don't know what happens, you know? Right. I mean, just something goes crazy.
Well, I agree with you. You know, sometimes that data is easy to find, maybe like some tech companies and things like that, but when you're talking like, you know, strength training equipment, sometimes that data is hard to find. Yeah. Where would you look? Where would you look to find that data?
As far as for
just kind of what, you know, how it's going to yield to maybe loss of game time or loss of man hours or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of studies. I know when I worked with Exos, they had some case studies that they did some wellness programs where they did research across 10 different health risks.
Yeah.
Took a certain number of people through a 12-week program. Then tested them again for all those risks. And so they put a dollar amount to the medical expenses for the risks at the beginning and the cost savings of the reduction in medical risks at the end.
Right.
And just with a 12-week program, they showed this one company about $850,000 worth of savings.
Wow.
Just in reduction of that. So some of the companies have some of that data. But, I mean, you know, some online searches can certainly get some results as far as that goes.
Well, again, I think you hit something really good there. It doesn't have to be this research in a journal all the time. It could be a case study that you put together, mm-hmm. you know, and track. And sometimes we forget that we're scientists as well, you know. And so making sure that we're doing that. You mentioned working with the NSCA and TSAC, you know, for those that are unfamiliar with this population per se, mm-hmm. talk a little bit about TSAC and kind of your involvement with them.
Absolutely. TSAC stands for the Tactical Strength and Conditioning Program. So it's the strength and conditioning program within NSCA that deals specifically with military, law enforcement, fire, you know, first responders, that type of thing.
Right.
Because there's a lot different risks associated with when someone goes down or has an injury, performance wise, as far as military, law enforcement, or that type of thing, as opposed to an athlete.
Right.
Athlete, okay, you go to the trainer, you get everything done, whichever. You go down in the middle of, you know, something going down, then sometimes that can mean a knock on the door back at home.
Right.
And so that's what this program is designed for, is trying to get people educated, get their knowledge base, you know, ramped up so that they know how to train differently. Mm-hmm. They know that there's a load carriage component that they have to deal with, as opposed to, you know, a regular athlete, you know, D1 or whichever. Sure, they have pads and all that, but it's not a 80-pound pack, you know, or 40-pound patrol pack or whichever, and then they're not carrying a weapon, you know, in this position, that kind of a thing. So this, the TSAC conference has been going on, I think this is either the 8th or the 9th year. I've come to every one of them, and the very first one maybe had about 110, 120 people. Now they're getting up at least 500-600, that type of thing every year. So, and it's interesting. It's an interesting progression how this has come about. But it is the only program dedicated to this community specifically.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this on the show quite a bit about, you know, as a strength and conditioning community, probably the most progressive that we've been in our generation has been the advancement of going into the tactical space.
Sure.
You know, I mean, the people that started our profession started in, you know, at a time when they thought it was bad to train athletes in the weight room, you know, and we've progressed it, but I think we've been pretty stalemated with the exception of in the tactical space where we're starting to really advance, and it's growing year after year, and opportunities are growing. And so coaches that are listening, I think, you know, taking a look at this space, I think it's really, really, really not only can be financially rewarding and all that, but it's also very just rewarding in your emotional state, you know, giving back to your community, be it local fire, SWAT, whatever, police, or even on a higher level with the military, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that. Dave, so we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I think one of the best pieces of advice that I heard and implement is take the simplest move and make it as hard as possible. I mean, just that simple thing can progress someone from, you know, from maybe an injury to back to performance. Or step up their game regardless.
Yeah.
I mean it's such a simple concept.
But
sometimes we have to go back to the basics.
Yeah.
And the basics are the basics for a reason. They're
right.
The foundation. And so when you make that foundation stronger by making it as hard as possible and as durable as possible, then you can build up from there.
Yeah. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, I'd say Supple Leopard.
Yeah.
Is a pretty good one. That one's always good. And as far as within this realm, the HPRC has a website for, you know, the tactical community. What's it stand for? I believe it's Health Promotion Resource Center.
Okay. Awesome. Is there an app that you recommend?
Oh, I haven't done the apps in a while. I mean, there's always the, you know, the basics. I'm not sure about Dartfish or Coach's Eye or, you know, that kind of thing. But something that you can give someone direct feedback on, especially on your Olympic lifts and that type of thing, then that helps you coach. Because we learn visually, too.
Yeah, so. Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, Davis, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And again, I think, you know, the fact that we've taken this, you know, like you mentioned, 8 years ago, 100 plus people to now, I would say there's probably close to 1,000 in there today, and growing this and laying all the groundwork. And it's guys like you that are putting in the time with the NCAA, that are putting out the courses, that are putting out the materials. So I truly appreciate that from everybody else as well. And just thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.